On this edition of the River Avenue Blues podcast, we express relief that the Yankees took the second game in the Cubs series, but most importantly, we're looking ahead to the Chicago series with Yahoo Sports' Dave Brown. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the River Avenue Blues podcast. I'm Joe, Jay's with me, and we've got a little wrap-up to do, a little preview to do. Hey, Jay, that win against the Cubs, that felt pretty good.
It did. There hasn't been a walk-off win this year, but this is the closest it kind of felt to one. And the only reason why is it was kind of one of those improbable wins on a wild pitch, which scored the what turned out to be the winning run that held up, and eventually the second run scored. And the Yankees won the game after David Robertson came in and closed. It was a frustrating first game, and I really, really got bummed out watching Tanaka in the rain. And that's the thing that I took out the most of it. I don't really see it was a second look for the Cubs as much as I saw. He just looked uncomfortable when that rain came down really hard.
Yeah, he looked like he was doing great before that.
Yeah, once the rain really came in, I mean, I think it was only two runs or something like that. And as soon as the rain started pouring, his control just fell apart, and the splitters did not look good. So maybe that's an adjustment that he needs to make. Maybe he didn't pitch in the rain that much in Japan. Don't know, and it might be something worth asking somebody who might have paid attention a little bit more in Japan.
Yeah, don't they have mostly indoor stadiums?
Yeah, they'd have a lot of domes.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be shocking to me if – I mean, obviously, he probably played during high school outside and, you know, before that in Little League, because I obviously you don't play indoors there. But I don't know if Tanaka, you know, spent that much time when he was in the pros pitching outdoors. I think that's one of those questions that might be good for a what's his name?
Mike Plew.
Yeah. He's one of those dudes that might be great to ask, but it's definitely something that I'd be curious about. So anybody listening to this, if you have any info on how many games Tanaka pitched outdoors, please send me a tweet. It's at Jay Destro, or just send it to at River App Blues. Be really interesting to see the response if anybody's able to find anything.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, like I said, we can put that game behind. It kind of sucked that the Yankees, for whatever reason, they just don't seem to hit Jason Hamill well at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then today, it was just frustration after frustration after frustration. Samardz is good, but it, you know, you kind of get sick of tipping your hat to the pitcher.
Yeah, there were some moments where they had guys on and they probably should have hit with runners in scoring position, but that seems to be one of those things that, I don't know, it's like some sort of bugaboo every year, it feels like, where you seem to be complaining about runners in scoring position, but once again it felt like there were just a lack of timely hitting, and maybe it was just because I don't want to watch a pitcher swing the bat, and maybe that's got a little bit for me, but that definitely was part of my frustration, is that, you know, maybe you get something going and now comes a pitcher and but I don't want to put that solely on that. And I also want to say Samardzija pitched a pretty damn good game. I mean, the only thing not to his credit, I would say, is the fact that I just don't know how you could take now 16 consecutive losses as a pitcher going back to last season.
Oh, yeah, or really, no decisions, yeah.
Or no decisions, losses or no decisions, and just really feel good about the team you're on. I mean, he's got a 1.62 ERA. You know, the guy's given up two home runs this year. Granted, he doesn't really give – it's not a home run, you know, giving up park that much. At least to the guys who are swinging out towards right field. But, I mean, batters are swinging .222 against him. He's got 51 strikeouts in how many innings? 61 innings. So, I mean, he's got some great numbers, and his stuff looks incredible. But we talked a lot about this last time, and I don't want to put too much because the amount of time I feel like we've put into Jeff Smarja and Cliff Lee in the last few podcasts. There's your Cliff Lee mention, everybody.
There's your Cliff Lee on the disabled list mention.
Yes, yeah, him and his elbow. Yep. But it feels like those two guys are going to be part of the conversation a lot, at least until Lee gets healthy. We'll see how that. But Smarja, I can't understand how this guy can go out there every fifth day and feel comfortable. And I know Christina, when she spoke with us last time, said, you know, they really should extend this guy and keep him around. But I feel like there are other organizations that could make way more use of his talent, just the same way I felt about a guy like Felix Hernandez. I felt like forever there were just other organizations that could have used the talent, but they kept the player because you had to have somebody to draw. And I feel like Samardzija is kind of like that.
Yeah, I can see that. But the thing, I actually think your first point was really good. That, you know, how good can you feel about how the team is doing behind him? And it's not like this is an isolated incident. I mean, Samardzija has been with the team on and off for many, many years now, and the Cubs have just been terrible in the last few years. I'm trying to look up now, like, when was the last time they finished over 500?
Jeez.
I'm looking it up now.
Was it 08?
That's as good a guess as any.
The last time I can remember was the series against the Dodgers.
No, in 09 they finished.
Was it 09?
They had 83 wins in 09, so they just barely hit it that year.
Well, I mean, the thing that I got out of this series in all four games, to be honest, the Cubs are bad. I mean, they play just bad baseball. And I understand that they're another organization that's got a plan, whatever it is, cool. But they allegedly have a plan. You know, I think if they did sign Masahiro Tanaka, maybe with two really big guys up at the front, you could have felt a little bit better about, you know, what you're doing day in and day out. But I just can't see how anyone and there were some stories about guys how much they really were disappointed when Alfonso Soriano left that team last year when the trade occurred. And I can understand, he's a guy who's been there, who's been a part of big teams that have done big things and probably brought that sense of professionalism to the team. But, you know, you can only wear it so many times before it starts to weigh on you, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So just to kind of wrap up the Cubs thing, Jeff Samardzija, I don't think is going to be on that team. I really do think that the lack of pitching that we're seeing is going to dictate the market pushing him out of Chicago. I mean, I know the last year or two, you know, there's been that talk around him constantly. Mm-hmm. I think that this is the year. I think that the two guys that you're going to look at that are really going to get all the talk and teams are going to actually be competing deals for the two guys. They're going to be Price and him. It's got to be Smarja and Price. And, of course, Hamble's going to be in there. But I think Smarja, Price are going to be the two big ticket items that people are going to want to go home with come August 1st.
Yep, and I think the Yankees are much, much more likely to land Hamill than they are anybody else right now.
I could see that a lot. And, I mean, not to say that Whitley didn't pitch well today. I mean, he didn't go very long. And, you know, he's got a total of 9 innings pitched now between his 2 outings. But, you know, he's pitching well. He's given up 1 run in those 9 innings. So it wouldn't be shocking to me that, you know, on that next fifth day, he's going to get the turn.
Yeah, but he's also, I mean, he can also transition into the bullpen if they need it. Sure. And be, you know, another line of those guys, all the guys they have that can go multiple innings. I'm so loving the way they have the pen set up this year.
It's not a lot of short guys.
Yeah, great. And it's great because they're guys that can go, you know, it's not like they can go five. You know, they can go 2 innings and they can still throw like a reliever. So it's nice to see, and it's nice to know that when a guy is going well, you can keep him in the game.
And, you know, the one thing that I got really annoyed with in the beginning of the season was how many times Matt Thornton just constantly walked people. But I feel like he's starting to get his control down a little bit. I like what I saw out of him today. you know, the big fastball. He got the lefty out that he had to get out.
Yeah, and that first guy made me nervous.
Well, you know,
he was all over the place a bit.
He got all the way to a 3-2 count, but eventually he got out of it. And, you know, he's a pro. He's a vet. He's one of those guys that's been there. Sometimes you're going to have to kind of, you know, bite your fingernails a bit. But I feel like he's a guy that can be counted on. I think that once you get past these early portions where you're first seeing guys, because that's where I feel a lot of Yankee fans tend to get scared, is when they get that first month or two of a guy and they're still not sure of who he is, because everybody thinks that every reliever has to be Mariano Rivera or nothing. But I think people will eventually understand that this is a guy that's going to be on this team for a little while. Going to have to just take what it is and understand that he's going to walk a guy here or there. Mm-hmm. And if you pitch him against a righty, he's probably going to give up a hit.
Yep. So we have four games coming up against the White Sox this weekend.
And we only know one person who's pitching for that team.
And, of course, it was supposed to be Hector Nwezi, and now it's Chris Sale. So you go from a guy they should just pound around to a guy who's one of the best. You know, he's probably a top 10 pitcher. And that's generally, he might be a top 5 pitcher in the American League when he's all there.
Yeah, Chris Sale was injured, and originally the plan was to get two starts in the minors before he got back up into the majors, but he went out into the minors and struck out 11 in like 4 innings, and then after that, you know, said, you know, let me go throw a side session. He threw his bullpen, came out of it feeling great, and he said, you know what, I'm ready to go. So the Yankees are going to face him tomorrow, which is scary as hell because he is damn good.
Yeah, and they're I think they're going to miss Jose Quintana. I believe he's throwing tonight.
I can tell you in a minute.
Yeah, I'm 99% certain he's throwing tonight. Which is nice because the rest of the Cubs rotation is just terrible.
Yeah, it's Quintana tonight. So
you know, they're going to get Danks in there this weekend. We talked to Dave Brown of Yahoo Sports a bit about this later in the segment. He didn't really give us a straight answer on who's pitching this weekend, which just kind of shows you. Their guys are going so poorly that it's tough for them to even say. I assume they're not going to pull Danks out of the rotation,
honestly,
given his contract.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you'll see someone in that awful bullpen get DFA'd. Or, you know, worst case, I guess they drop Danks, or at least put Danks in the bullpen. Or they drop Nwesi. It's one. There are like three moves. It's a bullpen guy. Danks goes or Nwesi goes.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody's getting DFA'd tonight.
Yeah, oh man, I didn't realize they had Frank in their bullpen.
Yeah, he's not active if I'm right.
Yeah, I thought they just activated him.
Did they?
I thought they had just brought him in.
Let me take a look at their transactions. And no, yesterday they selected Javi Guerrero.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they took Javi Guerrero from Charlotte and brought him up and put Matt Lidstrom on the DL because of an ankle.
Oh, that sucks. He was one of the good guys in the bullpen too. But Javi Guerra, he's a former closer. He has electric
stuff. The Dodgers, right?
Yeah, with the Dodgers. He has electric stuff. He just had no control over it, and they released him.
Yeah, and that bullpen features a bunch of names that people are going to know. You're going to know Scott Downs, and you're going to know Ronald Belisario and obviously Guerrero. You've heard of these people if you've been watching the American League or even watching the National League, specifically the Dodgers over the last couple of years. They're guys that, you know, they've been out there. They're vets, and obviously not all of them are the best, but they're walking human beings, and that's kind of what they need. But let's quick look at the outlook of that team right now. They got Tyler Flowers still behind home, who's I think a decent catcher. He's been with the team for a long time. You know, I believe he was drafted by them.
No, he came over from the Braves.
Was he a trade?
No, it was the Javi Vasquez trade from the Braves.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I know he was he somehow or another came up through their system. Adam Dunn is on fire lately. Paul Konerko is never going to go away, except maybe after this year. Gordon Beckham is one of those guys that I really think this is going to be his last year there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they got another year.
Yeah, I'm surprised he made it this long.
Yeah, they've got another year on his contract, but I can't see them going to arbitration with him again. I would imagine that they'll either move him or just not a non-tender him. And he's like the perfect like future Met kind of guy. that guy who can play solid defense, can't really hit much, and you know, will be cheap and readily available. For some reason, he feels like either like a backup infielder for the Dodgers or a Met. You know, and I don't say that in a negative way. It's just he's very reminiscent of those players.
I took it in a negative way, and that makes it funnier.
That's fine. Aramis, I'll say it incorrectly. We learned that this is not the right way, but Aramis Ramirez.
Oh no, no. That's the guy on the Brewers.
Oh, excuse me, Alexi Ramirez.
Yeah, that's not how you say it. Dave says it correctly.
Yes, but Alexi Ramirez is one of those guys that's impressed me for so many years. He's really, really good with a bat, and he plays a solid shortstop. And the one thing that I can always say is every time I see that guy with a bat, I think Alfonso Soriano. Like, he's got that same kind of, like, he's all arms and legs, and he's all over the place. He's skinny as hell, but boy, can he put a charge in the ball.
Yeah.
And who's playing third for them? Is it Gillespie?
Connor, yeah, he's having a good year. He's batting .347 with a .389 on base. So I'm still not convinced that this guy is for real. You know, he's only got 113 plate appearances, so he's not he's not like totally convincing yet.
And so we'll do a quick wrap up of the outfield. We got Dion Viciedo.
Big fantasy pickup, baby. Big fantasy pickup.
Alejandro de Aza, and then who they have in right now, is it Sierra?
No. It's Wright's Viciedo.
Viciedo?
Adam Eaton, who just came back from the disabled list, is playing center. They got him from the Diamondbacks over the winter.
Mm-hmm. And then they've got a couple other guys like Sierra and Garcia.
Yeah, Moises Sierra was like, we need warm bodies.
Yeah. So, I mean, offensively, they're probably going to score some runs on you, but their pitching, aside from Sale, is where you got to kind of take your hacks and really hope for the best.
Yeah, I do feel like without Jose Abreu, and now they're forcing Paul Konerko back into more action, and he's just having a pitiful year, and it's so sad that he's going out on this low note.
Yeah, and we talk a little bit more of that with Dave, which, you know, we only go into it briefly, but, you know, as a Yankees fan, I think that personally I've always looked at Paul Konerko and looked at him as a solid kind of he's the guy there. He always felt like the guy. I mean, him and what's his name? Miguel, the outfielder from the 05 series.
Maglio Ordóñez.
Maglio. He and Maglio felt like the heart and soul of that team for me for a long time, along with Mark Burley. I always kind of felt bad because I always felt that Mark Burley was like their Andy Pettit.
And him
leaving that organization kind of bummed me out because I felt like that was a guy who just. He should have stayed there and finished his career. Obviously, you know, money doesn't always equate to career happiness for the fans. But
no, and they were when he left for free agency, they were getting into that terrible period. So
yeah, so you can't blame him. But anyhow, we talk a little bit more coming up next on the podcast. We've got Dave Brown, and he's going to tell us a little about Paul Konerko. So we'll be right back with our guest, and our guest will be Dave Brown from Big League Stew at Yahoo.
riveravblues.com. Well, the good news is nobody else went on the disabled list since the last time we had this update. So it's still CC Sabathia, Michael Pineda, Ivan Nova, Sean Kelly, Francisco Cervelli, and Carlos Beltran. The bad news is that Sean Kelly suffered a setback when playing catch. So he is shut down now. There is no real timeline as to his return. I imagine he's going to take at least a couple days off before trying to play catch again. So that's a little bit of a blow, but you know, the other good news is that no one else has had a setback and no one else has gone on a disabled list. We did learn that Carlos Beltran, as of now, intends to play through his injury if it's at all possible. That is a bone spur in his right elbow. He is apparently scheduled to attempt swinging a bat on May 26th, so we're still a few days away from that. But that is the New York Yankees Injury Update, sponsored by nobody.
Hi, and welcome back to the River Avenue Blues Podcast. This is Jay, and I'm joined with Joe. And joining us today is Dave Brown of Yahoo's Big League Stew. Good afternoon, sir.
Jay and Joe, it's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us. So the reason we brought you around today is we're going to talk a little bit of White Sox. The Yankees finished up their series with the Cubs today, splitting that series with them. And today we kind of want to chit-chat a little bit, find out what we feel about going into the series from both sides. So let's first talk a little bit about injuries. And we could start with the White Sox DL list, which right now, and I say right now, includes Chris Sale, who will probably be activated before tomorrow's game. Jose Abreu, Matt Lindstrom, Nate Jones, Felipe Paulino, Avisio Garcia. They're all on the DL. So who right now would you say is healthy and really playing well for the White Sox?
That's a great question. Who's playing really well has been Alexei Ramirez, the shortstop. And although Hawk always calls him Alexei, but Alexei, we learned at some point that that's how you're probably supposed to pronounce it. He's been a terror at shortstop. I mean, he's been terrific. He's been hitting really well, and he's played real good defense for most of his career. So, I mean, that's one reason. You know, the White Sox are 500, which is a little bit of a surprise, like you said, given all their injuries, but he's played really well. Adam Dunn has, sort of taken the momentum from the Oscars and sort of gotten back to where he was before, where he actually gets wood on the ball sometimes, and he's hitting home runs and he's drawing walks, so he's been a big deal. Adam Eaton just got back from the DL, so presumably he's healthy, and he has been a terrific add when he's been out there as kind of a spunky leadoff guy, a get-on-base guy, a catch-everything. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure about his metrics defensively, but it seems like he's a pretty good center fielder. So, you know, those are three guys for one that have been playing really well and have been kind of carrying the White Sox when Chris Sale or Jose Abreu couldn't for a time. So they're much better than they were last year, that's for sure.
So Jeff Kepinger was released today I guess release waivers. I know he was hurt.
He was
there something that happened between he and the team that they decided to just cut bait?
I don't think it was a personality clash or anything, but you know, he's had a career where he's had some really good seasons. The year before he came to the White Sox, he was like a 125, OPS, adjusted OPS, and was with the Rays and was really good. Last year he didn't draw any walks. He got off to a tremendously horrible start at the beginning of the year where he just wasn't getting on base. I don't think there was anything
bad.
Yeah, I think
he had like a 283 OBP or something like that.
Something like that. I mean, just brutal. And, so you mentioned the injury, which is obviously it hurt him this year. But the White Sox, they for some reason they signed him to, I think it was a three-year contract, and it was $12 million. So, yep. I mean, that's nothing to sneeze at for the average person, but when they signed him at the time, it seemed like a bit of a stretch and a bit of a desperation move because they were looking for some infield depth. But they just have players who are at least as good, if not better, than Kepinger, and they don't have to worry about him coming back and dropping another 280 OPP on him. They've had a bunch of guys at second base who've done, I'm not going to say well, but I mean they've done it better than Kepinger did last year, and they've had other players at third base. So it's just one of those things where, it's possible that maybe this injury is a little more debilitating than they've let on. He's into his 30s now. Maybe Kepinger is done. I mean, it's possible that that is what it is. And it's just one of those things where the White Sox didn't need him anymore, so they decided they were going to eat his contract.
Sure, and it makes a lot of sense. I always felt that that contract was a little ridiculous, and the reason I say so is that I just didn't see – I know he had a career year with the Rays – and, Kepinger came off just tremendous year. And a three-year deal really seemed like a bit of a stretch for a guy of his talent level. I thought he was a talented guy, but I didn't see him as a three-year deal guy.
Well, it was one of those things where there were players who were like him who were signing one-year deals. And I think it's one of those mistakes that Rick Hahn, the GM of the team, made. And I guess it's good that they're owning up to it at this point. And I think the Yankees might have been interested in Kepinger last year and maybe thought he could help you know, with or not last year, but to
the year 2 years, before in 2012.
Year before that, so and he's a guy that you want to get sort of as a bargain. You know, you don't want to have to overpay guys like Jeff Kepinger. You want to just get some value out of that, and he was never going to be that for the White Sox. So you know, hopefully he's still got something left in him, but he's going to have to find out somewhere else.
So I'd like to get back to you, Rick Hahn, but Joe, what do you got?
Well, I just wanted to – I have a personal question to ask because Diane Vicieto, is that how you pronounce it?
Diane, yes.
Yes. Incredible this year. Is this just a Babbitt-fueled mirage or at 20 – he's 25. He's been in the league for way longer than I remember.
Yeah. He came in – you know, he came in from Cuba, which is – which kind of makes it weird. It's sort of – you know, you're never quite sure where they are with their development there. And he was like 20 years old or something when the White Sox got him. And I've been kind of patiently waiting for him to do something. And I think it's just a case of he needed to be in the league a few years to adjust. You know, he can't be a guy that I think you put out there absolutely every day because he'll get overexposed. And then, you know, he's kind of a free swinger. So I think there are limitations to Vicieto, but sort of what he's been doing this year is an indication that he can be a valuable something more than a role player, maybe not quite an everyday player for a team. You know, he'll be prone to strikeouts, but he also runs into the occasional fastball or hanger and hits it out. So, and he's played okay in right field. Again, I haven't really checked the metrics real close, but I haven't seen too many disasters yet. So and he's another guy who, you know, has filled in really well, and they've needed him to ever since Abasayo Garcia got hurt in the first week or two of the season.
And he's a Super 2 guy that's going to end up in arbitration next year. You think he's one of those guys that they may consider moving along, since, if I'm right, they've got plenty of guys who can kind of fill that role, if I'm right, as
yeah.
far as
well, and especially
field, right field.
No, it's true, and well, especially if they think Garcia is on a path to being able to come back next year, they have similar skill sets. I mean, Garcia is probably a little faster, but I could see them moving him for something. Who knows how the season goes? That could be a non-tender candidate in case they don't. I don't know. You know, it's just one of the White Sox can be weird sometimes with money. So,
yeah, I feel like he's one of those guys that like he's got to fall off a cliff to get non-tendered, and I really see him as a really good trade candidate next year, or at least the winner.
No, you're right. I'm coming at it, though, from maybe a few years more of disappointment and not seeing him, you know, sort of bear fruit a little bit. But, you know, if he has kind of turned a corner, letting him go, you know, I like you say, probably is a long shot.
Sure. So you mentioned Rick Hahn before, and that leads to my next question. And it has more to do with the organization than it does the players on the field right now. But from your perspective, what's been the biggest difference between Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn?
Maybe a little less bluster. You know, Kenny Williams was always, and still actually does sometimes, kind of insert himself into the story a little bit and make himself part of the deal. And, you know, that was part of why, not that it's bad necessarily that Ozzie Guillen isn't managing the White Sox anymore. I think it was time. But, I mean, that's one of the reasons why they split, because there was a personality clash. And Hahn is a little bit more of a, I don't want to say a nicer guy, but, I mean, he's just a little easier to deal with as far as personalities go. Now, as far as, you know, what they emphasize and what they look for, you know, I think they still kind of look for the same stuff in the drafts. It's not like the White Sox completely have overhauled their organization or their thinking in the last few years.
Sure.
So I think it's a little too early to say exactly how they're going to be different in terms of philosophies, because it just hasn't been that – A, it hasn't been that long, and B, Hahn worked under Williams for so long that they kind of already come in with similar philosophies. So it's, you know, maybe a little less bluster and a little less from a PR standpoint, sort of staying in the shadows a little bit and not being as prominent. I'm still not exactly sure what the difference is going to be in the long run as far as how they generally manage the team.
Yeah, so good Rick Hahn story. Back in 2011, when I was still writing for Fangraphs, Rick Hahn came and talked to the entire group one night when we were all at spring training in Arizona. And we were asking him about organizational philosophy stuff, and the subject of he brought up a good example. He said, "Well, we traded for Matt Thornton from the Mariners. We knew this guy had a lot of talent, but he just couldn't put it together there. So in spring training, we went up to him and said, well, what do you think you need to do to succeed?" And Thornton said, and Hans swears this is a direct quote, "I think I'm best when I throw the ball right down the fucking middle and make him hit it." And Rick said, "All right, well, throw the ball right down the fucking middle and let him hit it." And, you know, Matt Thornton turned into a viable reliever at that point.
That's Matt Thornton is one of the better reclamation projects that the White Sox have had in recent years. That Don Cooper is, you know, renowned as one of the better pitching coaches in the league. And I think one of the reasons is kind of simplifying things and breaking things down and not having things be so complicated for the pitchers. And I mean, that's not going to work for everybody. And that's a fun story for Thornton. It's not necessarily how it's going to go with everyone else. But I think that sort of gives you an idea as to, you know, maybe what the White Sox look for in talent, either in smaller trades or the waivers. They look at guys who maybe they think that they can get to from a mental standpoint and teach a little bit and just sort of let them be themselves. And, you know, Matt Thornton's had a really good career since he was with the White Sox, and it definitely wasn't looking that way before he got there. So it's a great story from Han.
Now, speaking of the pitching staff, we're looking at the probable pitchers, and it's – no one announced after Sale tomorrow. And it seems like, you know, Cooper is considered one of the best, if not the best, pitching coach in the game. But he's been working with some slim pickings this year. What's the current rotation looking like?
The current rotation is, you know, kind of, it's a little bit of a mess. Yeah. They got a couple of decent starts, one really good start out of a guy named Scott Carroll, who just kind of got lit up the other day in Kansas City. And, you know, that's kind of the thing. They, you know, they started the season with Eric Johnson, who was a decent prospect. But, you know, Jose Quintana has been pretty good as a left-handed pitcher, you know, since he's been with the White Sox, and he was with the Yankees organization and wasn't necessarily amounting to much. And he's kind of put it together. John Danks has been – I think John Danks – I mean, either he's done because of that shoulder surgery or he just is going to need – another year or years to learn how to pitch. He gives up too many home runs. His control isn't good enough as to where, you know, he can sort of, he's certainly not going to blow the ball by anybody. That could be a sunk cost at this point. And they just, Andre Rienzo pitched great yesterday against the Royals, and he's been okay. You know, so these names that I'm giving you, you know, they brought in, you know, Hector Noese, and he's been,
I'm sorry.
I know. Well, he's been bad.
But his best stop by a long shot this year.
That's true. You know, yeah. I mean, he's got like 20 strikeouts in 22 innings. So these guys, they have stuff. It's just, you know, I mean, that's why the White Sox are 500. They haven't had too much trouble scoring runs. But, you know, other than Sale and Quintana and, you know, once in a while, Scott Carroll or, you know, Rienzo or whatever, their starting pitching has been bad, and the bullpen has been pretty bad. But, you know, then they bring up a guy like Jake Patryka, and he's filled in okay. And Matt Lindstrom's peripherals are not great, but he only has blown one save, so I guess he's doing all right. And Ronald Belisario actually has been pretty good, aside from an early season three games. So, you know, I would say maybe overall a mediocre bullpen and a horrendous starting pitching rotation, Sale and Quintana.
So I wanted to ask you, I guess, a little bit of a heartfelt type of question. We're going through kind of a so long retirement tour with Derek Jeter here in New York, and Chicago, I believe, is doing it on a much, much smaller scale with Paul Konerko. Do you feel like he's really not getting what he deserves as far as a I guess, an around the league goodbye?
Yeah. You know, Paul Konerko should mean a lot to White Sox fans just because of not only the good play and the good citizenship since he's been up, but, you know, the 2005 World Series, mm-hmm. hitting the Grand Slam in Game 2 and just, you know, kind of being the soul of that team. And, you know, but he's just more of a local guy than a national star. Obviously, he's never really put himself out there too much. And, you know, I don't think it is – I don't think any reasonable White Sox fan goes, well, I think the league should be treating him like Jeter. And I know that's probably not what exactly you're asking, but I think it's Paul Konerko is the sort of guy that people will miss after he's gone. They'll go, you know, I wish we had more guys like him around, and maybe we should have been a little nicer to him on the last run. But I also don't think it's that bad of a deal that, you know, he's not getting his attention. One thing that's nice that you guys should look for when his last time at Yankee Stadium comes is he doesn't take selfies, but he takes pictures of him, the perspective of every right-hander's batter's box that he goes to in every city. So you'll see him sort of wander out of the field before everyone else, stand there like he's hitting, and put a camera up sort of at head level and take a picture just so he can, I guess he's making a collage or something, to remember what it's like to stand in the batter's box. And that's kind of his neat little Paul Konerko thing.
Or maybe he's like Randy Johnson and he's preparing for his second career as a photographer. You know,
Randy Johnson's a great photographer, too.
He really is, and I got to be honest with you. I mentioned it once in a while on Twitter, but I really believe that that man lives probably one of the best lives that I can imagine a human being as far as experiences between, you know, being one of the best pitchers in the world for a while, winning World Series, Cy Young's up the yin-yang, going to be a Hall of Famer. And, I mean, now he gets to hang out with rock bands and go on to watch race cars and take pictures of it.
Oh, yeah.
The
pictures of the race cars and the photo pits at the concerts. Wow. There's a unique dude right there.
I love it. So I want to kind of wrap up because, you know, we all have evenings that we want to attend to. And I wanted to ask you one, not necessarily directly baseball related, as far as on the field, but if you watch enough White Sox games, I imagine that you kind of have to make a decision on whether or not you like Hawk. Do you like Hawk? Because I know I actually had and the reason why I asked this question is Kevin Goldstein recently said that, you know, he enjoys Hawk. And he's an easy guy to kind of bash on, but he digs him. So what's your opinion?
You know, I get mad at him sometimes for, you know, and Hawk was, I remember I was 14, and Hawk was the general manager of the White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about, you know, apologizing for Hector, the pitcher. I mean, Hawk as general manager of the White Sox was just an unmitigated disaster. And I didn't like him that first time. He was a broadcaster in the early 80s when they were good and won the AL West. And he kind of came back in a little bit of a different form, but his second tenure as a broadcaster. But he's definitely an acquired taste. I totally understand why people don't like him. I enjoy his shtick. I enjoy disliking some of the things that he does. You know, when he gets quiet when the White Sox are losing or playing terribly, it's funny to me that he does that. And it's like, oh, just wait for the silence, you know, when things are going really foul for the Sox. And, you know, I understand why people don't like him. But then I listen to some of the other broadcasters around the league. And, heck, even with the White Sox, I don't care for Ed Farmer, their radio guy. I would listen. I mean, Hawk Harrelson, if you had to subject people to Hawk Harrelson or Ed Farmer every day, they'd be begging for Hawk. I mean, it's just, you know, his shtick isn't for everybody. But I think the best way, you know, the open mind for the fan going in listening to a Hawk broadcast is enjoy disliking him. You know, don't go in thinking, boy, I wish this was Vin Scully and, you know, my grandfather and all that stuff. It's because it's not going to happen. Enjoy disliking Hawk, and you'll get a lot more out of the broadcast.
This is exactly to the word how I feel about John Sterling.
I was about to say the same thing. I can't imagine having a different opinion on John Sterling than what you just said.
Right. Oh, and John Sterling, for me, give me John Sterling over Michael Kay any day. I mean, John Sterling
every
is
day of the week.
The stuff with Susan, and it's just it's like a little soap opera, and I know. You know, it's like WTF and who cares and with some of the things and the silly nicknames. You know, I give people silly nicknames all the time. So, I mean, I can't it's a similar thing with Sterling, I would imagine, definitely.
Yeah. Dave, thanks a lot for joining us. Of course, this is Dave Brown of Big League Stew over at Yahoo. Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I think like any books I got coming up are still in my head and haven't been written yet. So I appreciate you guys having me on. And if you go to bigleaguestew.com, you'll see my silliness. And every once in a while I'll write something serious or earnest as well. So thanks for having me on, and I'll do it anytime.
No problem. And Dave has a great Twitter that you should follow. It's at AnswerDave. So we'll be right back. Thanks again, Dave. And we'll be back in a sec.
And with that, another episode of the River Avenue Blues podcast comes to a close. I got to say, I really enjoy talking to Dave Brown. Followed the guy on Twitter forever, never heard him talk.
Yeah, very funny guy, very interesting, extremely knowledgeable. Like I said, follow him on Twitter, at AnswerDave. Make sure you follow at Joe Paul, at Mike Agziza, at B. Quebec, or Ben Quebec, whatever he is nowadays, and I'm at Jay Destro. Follow the River Ave Blues Twitter account, catch up with us on Facebook, and if you got any questions for the podcast, because we certainly haven't answered any yet, you can email us at podcast@riveravblues.com.
We have gotten one question. We're not totally pathetic.
Anyway, we'll get you next time, guys. Who's next on? Is it the Cardinals?
Yeah, the Cardinals. Will Leach is going to be on the show for that one.
Yeah, fancy. Look at us. We'll find out if there's sports on Mars.
All right. So
have a great one.
For Jay and I guess Mike, even though he wasn't on this episode, I'm Joe, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.